This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Ryan Bennett, an Aussie Canuck living in the Central Coast, Australia. And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to Flushing Meadows and the penultimate day of the US Open, where you find myself, Catherine Rittigan, Matt Roberts, David Law in the media garden. Thank you to Ryan Bennett there that you heard in the intro. Ryan from Australia, he says he's been an avid listener for several years and a returning friend. He wants to sincerely thank the three of us for doing a great job, and he always looks forward to the next episode without fail. Keep loving New York, he says. And Ryan, we absolutely are loving New York, because tonight has been such an incredibly special night here, hasn't it, David?
Yeah, it has, and it really moved me in a lot of different ways, really, because I felt as though either way this story went, it would have meaning for the sport, and it was going to be really emotional for the winner and the player defeated. And for the crowd, there was total buy-in from everybody here and eyeballs all over the world, all over this country. I know there's a lot of other sports that the US Open competes with at the moment, because college football came on straight after the final and that was a big game, and the NFL's just starting and all these other things. But it really does feel like this is a story that has cut through. It feels like Coco Gauff is recognised around this country anyway. And now, to have won this title and to have won it the way she did it, all the way through, coming from behind in these matches, and to do so again today, it almost feels like that's her trademark now, that it's very recognisable what a fighter she is, and the way she just dug that out after a really tough first set. It was great, and the atmosphere was electric.
2-6, 6-3, 6-2 for Coco Gauff over the woman that will be world number one come Monday, Aryna Sabalenka. Not the highest quality tennis match you will ever see, no. But for drama and for storylines and for quotes and for moments, it was kind of everything, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an extremely compelling and stirring match, I think. The Arthur Ashe Stadium was, I think, the loudest it's been all tournament. Certainly the loudest I've experienced this tournament. And just a match which I think told you a lot about how hard it is to win Grand Slam finals. I mean, Aryna Sabalenka has already won a Grand Slam final, and I think I've been expecting that maybe she would use that experience and be able to play like that again. But, you know, Aryna Sabalenka in big matches since then has not been peak Aryna Sabalenka. And I think that just tells you how hard it is to win these matches. And full credit to Coco Gauff for kind of forcing that version of Aryna Sabalenka to come out. Because after that first set, I was kind of thinking, What can Goff do here, other than slightly tidy up her own game? What can she do other than, you know, rely on Aryna Sabalenka starting to miss? Because it was in Sabalenka's control that first set, and the moment of the Grand Slam final, and particularly Coco Gauff and her defence, brought out the errors from Aryna Sabalenka. And I thought it was just incredible to witness Coco Gauff at 19, with all the pressure and expectation on her in New York, be able to be the more poised, calm, better player out there as that match went on.
I've got to give an assist to my mum here in a text that she sent me mid-match, but because it made me realise something about what I was seeing. It reminded me of an Andy Murray match. You're watching it going, it doesn't look right that you're winning these points, that you're winning these games, that you're winning this match. Like, you've got no right to be doing that against somebody who just is the better ball striker. Certainly tonight was the better ball striker, and you're thinking, okay, you've just won one unbelievable scrambling point, but you can't do that for a whole match. Like, that's just not, this doesn't add up. And yet there she is doing it point after point after point from the second set onwards. And there were things about her speech as well that reminded me of Andy Murray, but that is what it looked like to me today, where you're like, how is this working? You're defying things about that I think I know about the sport. It was, look, I never want to give too much credit to coaches, particularly when it's male coaches behind a female player, but she won ugly tonight, didn't she?
Yeah, she did, and she didn't like doing it that way. It was really great that she was honest about that in her press comments. I don't want to win my Grand Slams like that. I don't want to have to play like that in order to do it. I want to be the one hitting the winners and taking people on. But she knew that the heavier firepower was coming down from the other end, and it was going to be her defence, her movement, that could be the difference maker, and her tenacity. And those are great comparisons with Andy Murray. I absolutely see that. She just wouldn't let it go. And that's when I said that it's become a trademark, I think right back to the French Open when she lost that first set to Mira Andreeva in a 7-6 tiebreak. And she's just getting outplayed, really, by somebody with this prodigious talent. And yet she believed that she'd actually got the upper hand at the set down. And that there's clearly such a well of belief. And I know that it is, we've touched on how she copes with in the conditions that we were all suffering and all the players were suffering. I mean, when she said in a press conference, this didn't affect me at all, this weather, this last few days, it was hard to actually believe you're hearing this, and yet totally believe her. She's trained in South Florida for all these years, that this is what she's used to, and she's just become hardened to it. And what a competitor, what a champion she is. I mean, brilliant to watch, that was.
It made me think of something that Mary Carrillo told us a while back about Coco Gauff, which is that she used to dominate the juniors because she was just such a better athlete than everybody else, and she could just rely on that. Not like other areas, not like the ball striking is bad or anything, but it didn't need to be the best in the game because the athleticism was just head and shoulders above anybody else. And she's been able to bring that to bear again this summer. I know we've been joking about Brad Gilbert shouting, make it physical, but what he's saying is, this is what you have on everybody else. I don't care who's down the other end of the court and what they're throwing at you. You have that. Make that the determining factor of this match. And she did today. I felt like she, you know, I was watching the opening stages of that match fearing awkwardness, because I was like, how does Coco Gauff make win points unless Sabalenka coughs up an error? And I felt like she thought the same and went, okay, well, I got to make Aryna Sabalenka cough up errors then. And Sabalenka played a good first set, but there were errors there. There were some quite loose errors, particularly from short balls. She was really struggling on those, and I felt like, whether consciously or subconsciously, Coco Gauff did some math and said, like, okay, she's missing one in every six ground strokes. So if I just make her play two or three more every point, she's going to miss more. Mm. And that's going to be the difference.
Not sure I've ever seen movement like hers. I mean, we've seen some incredible athletes. Steffi Graf was just an astonishing athlete. But that was speed. This is speed and flexibility and anticipation. I'm just not sure I've seen anything quite like what she's got.
Yeah, pretty much all the high-quality, gasp-inducing moments of this match were something to do with Coco Gauff getting a ball back that no one else would get back.
Yeah.
And just retrieving from the baseline relentlessly. And I think if we look at the match, I really think a big moment was the very first game of the second set. And I did say this at the time.
I was going to actually just interject and say that, Matt, so that you didn't have to, but...
You thought I'd just make sure.
But I've sounded like a dick.
He's had such a rough fortnight that he needed to get that out there.
Come on, then.
He did lean over and go, bookmark that game.
Okay.
Because
I like that.
Two of Gauff's first three serves in that second set were double faults. And she had tailed off at the end of that first set. She was vulnerable, I think, in that moment. And Gauff did... Sabalenka did not take advantage in that game. She had 15-40 and then missed three of her next four returns, Sabalenka. And that let Gauff through the game. I thought that was a big moment at the time. Another big moment was the game where Gauff broke in that second set. She hit an incredible backhand passing shot. And that turned it. That got the crowd up. That got the crowd with her. That was the first moment where I thought, okay, Goff's no longer just defending in these rallies. She's actually either defending well enough to extract an error out of Sabalenka, or on occasion she's turning defence into attack. She started to do that a lot more as the match went on, and she started to change the way she was serving. She was really struggling to hold serve in that first set. Even though her percentage was good, the serves weren't having an impact, and she started to serve bigger, I think, in that second set and just get more free points with the serve. And you know, that's a Billie Jean King champions adjust line moment, really, isn't it? And I think her whole approach to this tournament has been, as she said, she doesn't want to necessarily play like this, but she realised that it was the best way of getting her to win this match, and it absolutely was. The central question of this, it was, can Gauff's defence extract enough errors from the Sabalenka attack? And in the first set that wasn't happening, but Sabalenka's attack went from needing to be decent to needing to be really, really good because of how well Gauff got used to it. I was thinking of the line you heard in commentary the other day, David, about taking a set to adjust to pace. I think there was a little bit of that as well with Gauff.
Yeah,
seemed to get used to the Sabalenka ball a bit more. It was just an incredibly, incredibly impressive adjustment all match from Gauff. Particularly, you know, as we always say, best of three sets, it can get away from you quickly, and she didn't let that happen. It was just so impressive.
David, you were in Aryna Sabalenka's press conference, and a recurring theme of it is the phrase, it was me against me.
Yeah.
She thought that match was on her racket and she let it go. Do you agree?
The thing is, I don't know where one starts and one begins, because I think that Gauff did what she needed to do to cause that. Now, you might say, well, if Sabalenka was good enough, she'd have just hit through it anyway and she wouldn't have allowed that. And I just think that that's a bit like when we were watching Carlos Alcaraz last night, and you know they can reach that level, but can you reach it and sustain it and do it all the time? Like, maybe Ben Shelton's a better example, because I think Alcaraz actually can. Ben Shelton had his moment against Djokovic and he was awesome. You know, and he can hit through this incredible retrieving and so forth, but can you do it long enough? And Sabalenka did it for a set, and yes, she did start missing, but was that because she was poor, or was that because Gauff was putting her in horrible positions time after time? It's probably both, isn't it? I think she also had a really nice way of... She gave credit to Gauff in that press conference. She wasn't just saying that slightly mean-spirited thing of, well, it was only she only won because of me. It wasn't like that, but she did keep coming back to that. I think she is going to suffer the next few days thinking about this match because she's got such an appetite. She'd so much wanted to underline her status as the new world number one with a Grand Slam title. But she did also say that that will cushion the blow a little. The fact that she is world number one, she will lean on that a little bit. The one thing I would say, and I'm curious to know what you two think about this, having watched the match, is there was no adjustment from her at all. And the same was going on against Madison Keys. Now, she lost a 6-love set, and she just keeps on hitting. That's what she does. And eventually, against Keys, it clicked. And look, that can work. That is her way of doing it. I just think she's a good enough tennis player with good enough racket skills to do something else when she's missing. And she doesn't even try. And I feel like that is somewhere that she needs to go back and adjust.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's not a plan B. And she's good enough to be able to have a plan B. Like, yes, it's not going to be as good as plan A, which is blasting winners, but...
Take a leaf out of Goff's book.
Right, exactly. And she's a great athlete, Sabalenka. You know, I think she could use that athleticism in defence more than in attack. You know, obviously her main tactic is to use what she's got aggressively, but I feel like she could maybe use it defensively a bit as well. And honestly, I think we've probably said the same after every Sabalenka loss at Slams this year. She's got an incredible record in the majors this year, 23-3. You know, that's outstanding, and she's won one, obviously. But all three of those losses, she had match point on Mukova, and it ran away from her. She was a set and a break up on Onsheber at Wimbledon, and it ran away from her. She was a set up today, and it ran away from her. It's always the same, and that's a kind of tough thing to reconcile with the fact that she was so good in Australia. But maybe, I suppose, that is the difference. Like, in Australia, she was playing well and was able to keep it going. Here, when she starts going off, she can't bring it back in the really big matches. I think she's got better at bringing it back this year because of all the consistency.
Semi-final, though. 6-love first set, she brought it back.
Yeah, but I do think that Madison Keys, like, matchup-wise, that was just so different.
It was easier against hitting contest. I think the same thing with Rybakina. She could still go toe-to-toe.
She hadn't played... I mean, there's no one who can defend like Goff, but as I said yesterday, she played a lot of hitters in this tournament, and I think she's more comfortable in that matchup. Jabeur's not a hitter. Mukova's not a hitter. They can disrupt her a bit. Goff disrupted her with the movement, and, yeah, there needs to be more of an adjustment, I think, from Sabalenka.
I wanted to see more resistance from her in that third set. It felt like she was lacking in fight a little bit. There was a resignation about her body language. Now, we were quite high up in our seats and we didn't have a monitor or anything, so I could be reading that wrong, but it kind of felt like, oh, none of it's going in. I've got nothing else. Blah.
Yeah.
She had a medical timeout, didn't she? I don't know how tactical that was. She certainly said in press it was nothing major. She said, I was tight and that made my hamstring feel tight. I'm not saying there was nothing going on, but that
wasn't,
felt a
wasn't
little...
great.
It felt like a card to play, to be honest.
I thought that was the... And I can't know, but it felt like the last throw of
dice. If that's the only card that you're playing in that situation, yeah. I don't know.
She was doing that, and the tactics never changed. She was just smacking away. I mean, it's a question. I wish I'd asked it then. I'm definitely going to ask her the next time I'm in a press conference with her. Is, have you thought about... do you have a conversation with your coach about what happens if I start missing? Is there supposed to be a plan B that you don't employ? Or do you just never think about that? I mean,
it's such a fine line, isn't it, for athletes? Because they're all about, I'm just going to focus on myself. And if I play my game, I have to believe in myself. And I get why that has to be true for the sake of your confidence and self-belief and to help you ride out rough patches. But tennis is about matchups. It a lot of the time it's about what's coming at you from the other end of the court. And Coco Gauff, look, Matt said it, Billie Jean King said it first, champions adjust. Sometimes just focusing on yourself and what's going on there isn't enough. You need to adapt to the situation and what's coming at you. And she's still really young.
Yeah.
And as exactly as we're saying, she's good enough to add this stuff to
not
her
sure
game.
Not sure I've ever seen her try any match. And we've seen her for... I mean, I know she is young, but we've seen her for 5 years now.
Mm.
So it's quite interesting. I mean, look, and when her game is on, it's so awesome. So I can kind of maybe understand why she thinks, well, if I just get it back, I'm going to knock her off the court again. But
I just think it's a lot of pressure to put on yourself if you're in control of every point. Do you know what I mean? Like, because if you're suddenly starting to feel tight and your only play is to swing and swing, and therefore you're more likely to miss, I think it would almost relieve some of the pressure if, like, she sort of let the other person dictate for a moment.
Just... And the thing is, she's not a bad mover for her side.
No.
Like, she's not Coco Gauff. She never will be. She is not a bad mover, though. We're not talking about, all due respect, Petra Kvitova here, like a big hitter that just needs to swing, because, like, she can scramble a bit and retrieve and
good hands.
It's not plan A, but she's well. Wasn't she world doubles number one? Certainly,
yeah.
Part of the world number one team in doubles.
There's definitely more that could be added to
yeah.
her game, even if not technically there, just almost philosophically as a tennis player, just to accept that set of circumstances and employ something else.
Mm. The noise inside that stadium, and I know we've had a few messages on Instagram about what people think was disrespectful cheering of Aryna Sabalenka's errors. She was pretty dismissive of that in press. She said that wasn't really a fact of her tonight. She was prepared for it and thought it was justified, really. I thought it was mostly fine.
Yeah, but it must be really hard when
oh,
you're hitting balls in the net.
Unbelievable.
And that noise is being made. Like, I totally get why they're making that noise. I don't think...
Is this the clapping after a fault, or is this the make an error and the crowd erupt noise?
That one.
That one,
The
yeah.
one where she's lost a point, meaning Goff's won a point,
yeah.
meaning, yeah!
Yeah.
I also think an element of it was that Goff was behind for so much
yeah.
of that match. She was the underdog. It's like what we were saying about the dynamic between Shelton and Tiafoe. Like, if you're doing that for the underdog, it's not bullying, is it? If Goff were 6-love, 2-love up and they're cheering Aryna Sabalenka's mistakes, that feels like bullying.
Feel a bit
but
harsh,
just
it?
Sort of giving her any help you possibly can when she's in a desperate situation, it just feels a bit different to me.
Yeah.
I have massive sympathy with Aryna Sabalenka and anyone in that situation.
Mm.
But
yeah, I mean, Sabalenka errors are a totally legitimate way for Coco Gauff to win a point, and therefore I think a legitimate thing for a Coco Gauff fan
mm.
to cheer.
I didn't.
But it's tough for Sabalenka.
I didn't feel like it overstepped. I thought it was... It probably is the loudest that I've seen since... Well, since last year when Serena was having her final run
here.
Well,
how did that
here,
noise compared to Serena? Because I wasn't in the stadium for... I got to watch a little bit of the Kontaveit match from in the stadium. Did get to experience it, but not much. Not like you two did. And the roof was on tonight, so it was just a total hot house of the atmosphere. And that was the loudest I've experienced inside.
Felt
there.
Massive to me.
It was massive, but it would be recency bias to say it was louder than last year.
Wow.
It was extraordinary last year for Serena.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was.
Yeah. 22 more, Coco. Start
and
now.
And actually, you know, I mean, I know you're coming to talk about the press conference, Catherine, but the journey she's been on has been incredible, hasn't it? When you talk about 22 and the when she started as a 15-year-old, I didn't know so much was going on there with her, you know?
Yeah, I can't believe how much we're going to end up talking about the journey that a 19-year-old has gone on
yeah.
to become a Grand Slam champion. It's quite ridiculous. I mean, it was a fascinating press conference, absolutely fascinating. She gave us real insight into what's been going on with her recently. She soft launched a boyfriend. I don't
yes.
know if anybody else noticed that.
I did.
Still reeling.
Good for her. Nobody seems to know about it.
Did we know that? I didn't.
And then I was like, I definitely didn't.
And I feel like that answers the question of who she called when she was sat on the chair.
I think
and they were doing the setting up the stage, which, P.S., takes too long in tennis.
I think she did say that she called one of her brothers.
She did, but she said he didn't answer till the last minute.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, she definitely soft-launched a boyfriend in that press conference.
Probably quite a good way to do it, you know. bury that news, yeah. Slightly
but
under the title.
She gave us this incredible insight into how... It wasn't woe-is-me stuff, but how tough it's been mentally for her being a teen phenom, which, of course, makes total sense. It was kind of absurd what happened to her 4 years ago. People predicting off the back of one Grand Slam run that she was going to be the greatest player of all time. I mean, that was happening for real 4 years ago. But she's so mature and grounded and eloquent that it always felt like she wore it incredibly lightly.
That it was all under control.
Yeah.
But what she actually explained to us when you asked about it was that she said she thought I had a time limit on when I should win. And when I didn't win aged 17, there was a graphic that went up and said Serena did that, so she's missed that now. She hasn't achieved what Serena... I mean, what a thing to have to carry around in your head. I mean, some people that might not bother, but she made it very clear, although she wasn't letting us in on that at the time, and I think how can you really articulate that when it's going on, but in hindsight really really bothered her, and it wasn't the only thing, you know. There was a lot going on for her, and she said in her ESPN interview, I thought she said it on court at first, but I've remembered since that she said it in this ESPN interview. She was sat next to Pam Shriver and their team on the desk there. She said, when I lost that French Open final, I thought the world was going to end, you know, and that's what I kind of asked her about, is when did that stop? Because she was talking about how now she came into this final and she very clearly had the view that I really, really want to win, but if I don't, that doesn't mean I'm a failure. My mum and dad still love me just the same, and it's okay, you know. And I think that that's freed her up. And I mean, I guess maybe she's had some psychological help to help her come to that realization. I know she talks very gratefully about her parents having made it very clear to her that she's loved regardless. And you could see that throughout this tournament. Yes, she wanted to win. Yes, there was pressure. But she wasn't carrying it in quite the same way as she describes how she felt before. And obviously it helps that she's improved as a tennis player, that she's figured some stuff out the last few weeks. But I'm just really happy for her as a person that she's got to that mindset.
She said some pretty sucker punch stuff about how during the ceremony at last year's French Open, when Iga Świątek was collecting the trophy, she made herself sit there and watch Iga Świątek lift that trophy and imagine what it would feel like. She made herself sit in her feelings. What must have been, well, what she told us tonight were pretty ghastly feelings in that moment, which, you know, I think there's a lot, well, I mean, there's a lot of people out there. Life's hard, I get it, but there's certainly a lot of tennis players out there that aren't really feeling their feelings, aren't, you know, feelings in a box. Let's, you know, because it's brutal out there, and it's too much to deal with, but she's letting it all in, and becoming a Grand Slam champion anyway. It's incredible. And then she talked again about experiencing something similar at Wimbledon this year when she lost in the first round. She was asked about that footage which has been doing the rounds over the last couple of days of her as an 8-year-old coming here on Kids' Day.
Great advert for a Kids' Day.
You said that, because I was debating whether or not to get on my kids' horse, the Kids' Day high horse, but, like, Kids' Days matter, folks.
Yeah.
Everyone should be doing a Kids' Day, and that's the end of it. you know.
Yeah, to see her dancing and enjoying it and having fun, regardless of whether what the tennis is, just having fun and then realising...
Coco Gauff is telling you, I saw that that could be me.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here today. She told us that in plain words. That's the end of it. Everyone needs to be doing kids' days. But yeah, she was asked about that footage of her here when she was 8 years old, and she was asked when she first dreamed of becoming a Grand Slam champion herself, and she talked about that, and she said, yeah, it probably was when I came here and I started to dream, and I've always been a dreamer, but there have been times recently where that dream died. It was really powerful stuff. And I hadn't had my hand up for a question at the start of the press conference, but off the back of that I did just put my hand up, and I was lucky to get a question because there was quite a queue. And I said, I just want to follow up on that. What, if you can, what were those moments that the dream died or faded? And she said, Wimbledon this year. That was 2 months ago, guys. 2 months ago that she lost in the first round to Sofia Kenin and did not play badly. Like, that was a great match. There were errors in there, but Sofia Kenin played brilliantly, and I thought it was a tough matchup for Coco Gauff. You know, she's playing a qualifier who had matches under their belts. Like, it could so easily have been a defeat that she chalked up to. Tough draw, tough opponent, these things happen, move on, stay on the treadmill, next week's another week. But she managed to kind of not catastrophize it, but also use it as fuel to do something different and reboot and
overhaul.
Totally overhaul, exactly, and learn how to win ugly and not be a perfectionist. And yeah, it was absolutely fascinating, wasn't it?
And she gave credit to her dad, both for the as the person who continues to give her scouting reports and opponents, but whose idea she said it was to hire Brad Gilbert. And when you consider her dad and her mum, that they were ever present in her box, they were always there. A big part of her coaching, as well as obviously being her parents. Huge moment, isn't it? When they take a step back and they put her in the hands of somebody else. And let's be honest, that's now three US Open champions that he has been involved with only months after starting to work with them. That can't be a coincidence. That's 30 years span. 1994 for Andre Agassi, 2003 for Andy Roddick, 2023 for Coco Gauff, and it's no more than 6 months with any of them before that happened. But it was, I did love how she went bolting up to her dad, and they were in tears before they even hugged, the two of them. It was such a touching moment, and she said she'd never seen her dad cry in her whole life before, and that was lovely, really. The one other thing about the press conference that she said that it was a little insight into somebody I don't know Coco Gauff. She says, I'm really argumentative. She says, I go and look at the comments, and I was looking at the comments last night.
That was the other Andy Murray comparison.
She went into, she did this on the court and in the press conference, because she said, did she dedicate the win to people that hadn't believed in her?
Like to thank all the people that didn't believe in me.
She said, you thought you were pouring water on my fire, but actually you were putting gas on it.
And, like, fantastic, good for her. But it was, was it in the press or was it on the court where she went into detail? She was like, when I won Washington, everyone was like, oh, but it's a 500, that's her limit. And then when I won Cincinnati, they were like, oh, but it's a 1,000, that's her limit. Now, here I am with the Grand Slam title. And, like, as I say, good luck to her. She's obviously an Andy Murray-type character that has a massive streak of defiance in her and is able to use things like that for fuel. But fact check, I'm not sure people were saying that. Certainly not after Cincinnati. Like, maybe at points in the last few years, but I feel like most of the world was picking Coco Gauff to win this title after she won Washington, I mean, and Cincinnati.
She's found a few comments on social media, I think, generally, and sounds like she's gone looking for them.
Yeah, I mean, which
Brad Gilbert used
to... It's like Andy Murray and his, the doctor that told him he'd never walk again or whatever it was.
Brad Gilbert worked with Andy Murray in 2006. And I remember I did an interview with him and he said, look, Andy Murray is a natural contrarian. If you say one thing, he's going to say the other. And I mean, so there's the comparison again. And I dare say if you go back, I think probably Agassi and Roddick were similar as well. And I think that, you know, I don't know how long it'll last with Gilbert, but God, he doesn't half get something out of these people.
All I can say, Coco, if you're a newsletter subscriber and you saw I had Sabalenka in three, you are welcome. I put a fire in you.
She did say, she did point it, she looked around the room and she said, I know all your Twitter handles. Matt was like, I'm not going to get called out again. It was a tough scene for Elon Musk, that press conference, wasn't it? She repeatedly referenced Twitter and not X.
Go on, Coco.
It's not happening, Elon. The youth aren't adopting it. Wow. You know where I'm going next, don't you?
I think so.
What does it mean? Well, it means first of all, we've got a really, really exciting Grand Slam champion who... look, I'll say I doubted whether she would do this, whether she would ever do this a few months ago. She can have me as one of the people she's proven wrong. And I didn't think for sure she won't, because she's so young, she's so athletic. And I kind of think in the back of my mind, I thought, she's so dedicated and such a good athlete, I think she'll probably end up figuring it out. But right in front of my eyes, I don't see how it happens. Something will have to change, because she looks way off. You know, when you consider the big three, as we've talked about it, and Świątek, Rybakina, and Sabalenka, that she just didn't look anywhere near that, and with this liability of her forehand in particular. But what does it mean for the future? Well, she is not going to be going on a victory lap that's going to last very long. I'm sure they'll make the most of it. She has Tony Godsick as an agent. They will make the most of this, as they should, you know, and she will become a massive star. She'll be doing morning show circuit in the morning, I dare say, here in New York, and it'll be fantastic. She'll be bringing the sport to new eyeballs, which is big in itself, for the future. In terms of what she might go on to do, I still think she has issues with her game that can be improved, but I just don't think her intensity and her desire is going to dip for a moment. I think she loves this sport, she loves winning, and she loves competing, and I think she'll carry on trying to do that. But I do feel like this, it'll be interesting to see what she does with the off season. You know, do they try to take a period of time and actually try and tweak, fix? Do they need to? I don't know, but I think she will win more.
Will she play Billie Jean King Cup and WTA Finals? We are aware, by the way, that that is something that we're yet to discuss. The announcement that the WTA Finals this year will be going to Cancun, and mark my words, we will discuss it when we've got time to give it the time that it deserves.
Just thinking about golf and that line about how she felt like she maybe needed to achieve stuff when she was young, because that was sort of the pressure that was put on her, and you know how easily you can be defined by the early stages of your career. Like, I wonder now whether there's a bit of a pressure release now. Like, she's done it young, you know, she'd already had incredible success as a teenager, but she's sort of done now what everyone was expecting or hoping or willing of her, and you know, now she's sort of able to go on to like the next stage of her career in a way, and she's still young and yet she's got experience, which is a combination that I think is very powerful. I have to think she wins more majors. Like, I think that's the thing, I see so many ways she can still get better as a tennis player. Like, exactly as you said, this, as young as she is, this feels ahead of the curve in terms of her actual game, because of things she can still fix and still get better, and yet she's learned to use what she has to this incredible effect. If she gets better and continues to maximise, she's going to be so good. She can, you know, she's already reached the final, the Grand Slam final on clay, so she's got, you know, multiple surfaces covered as well, which is a big element that I look for. Just, you know, just so you don't sort of lose momentum through the season. I always think that's important. Yeah, it's exciting because, like, I don't think the big three is. They've been extremely consistent this year, and I think
we
there was
early
a time,
on the big three, guys,
like there was a time
we?
Where it felt a bit like the big three, but I don't think that's really a thing. And
it was a moment in time.
Oh,
right.
Wow, we've
it might come back.
We've put the kibosh on the big
three.
Well,
they haven't won the last two majors, so it's kind of tough to say that they're the big three if, you know, Vondroušová and Goff hold half of the slams. But, you know, so therefore I think there's an opportunity is what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't feel like anyone's... As players, you've got a big hold of this sport. Iga Świątek, Arina Sabalenka is now the world number one. But there's room in there as well for Coco Gauff to be so consistent and win major titles. And I think she'll do more of it.
Can I tell you something else that it means?
Oh, yes, please.
It means that if you'd like to see Coco Gauff attempt to do the hard court Grand Slam double, AO Travel can sort you out.
Yes, they can.
The Tennis Podcast throughout the US Open, if you don't already know, is brought to you in partnership with AO Travel. And as I've said, they operate the travel program for the Australian Open. They take care of everything for you. Flights, accommodation, tickets, behind-the-scenes stuff, the AO Travel Lounge, which is new for 2024. It's the best seat in the house. It's air-conditioned. It's the place to be. There's even walk-on experiences onto actual Rod Laver Arena. Actual Rod Laver Arena.
Imagine that.
Down that Walk of Champions, which is, I love that Walk of Champions, and I love
touch
when people
your favourite champion.
Tap themselves as they're walking on. One of my moments of last year was, or this year rather, was Seb Korda tapping his dad's picture.
Oh yeah, that was a good
loved
one.
That moment. And we have a $500 Australian dollar discount code available for AO Travel Lounge packages for all Friends of the Tennis Podcast. So that is one of many reasons right now to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, alleviating your post US Open blues and getting access to that incredible discount code. And as you've been hearing about for the last 10 days or so, to celebrate the launch of the AO Travel Lounge, one lucky Tennis Podcast listener is going to win big. They're going to win an AO Travel Premium Lounge package for themselves and a friend to visit the Australian Open in style this coming January. You'll get two return economy flights to Melbourne, tickets to the Rod Laver Arena over the middle weekend of the Open for two people, and three nights accommodation at the five-star Pullman on the Park Hotel in Melbourne. Plus, of course, two-day access to the incredible AO Travel Lounge. You can enter the prize draw today by clicking on the link provided in your show notes. You have until Monday, the 18th of September at 11:59 p.m. New York time to enter. Terms and conditions apply. Very best of luck. And just while we're on the subject of incentives to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, you can of course get yourself an intro or a shout out. You can introduce the show just like Ryan did today, or you can just become a friend just to get access to more than 50 bonus podcasts. Boppos.
Hannah's told me on Twitter.
Let's make that happen. And The list keeps going, guys. You can take part in a live YouTube Q&A with us on Monday at 1 p.m. New York time. That's 6 p.m. UK time and 10 a.m. West Coast time in the States, and some sort of time in Australia. Who can say? Can't do that math right now. So that is available exclusively for friends. Just go to tennis.supportingcast.fm to sign up. tennis.supportingcast.fm to sign up and become a friend. And the link, of course, is also in our show notes. Last bit of business for you here before we do a preview of tomorrow's men's final. We also have a live show tomorrow. That is Sunday, probably today by the time you're listening to this, or like weeks ago if you're catching up. The live show is at 2 p.m. New York time on Sunday, 7 p.m. UK time, 11 a.m. West Coast time. Nailed it. And it is on YouTube. The link to watch is in our show notes. It's available to everyone. We'll be answering your questions, looking back on this women's final, looking back on the tournament, and of course looking ahead to the men's singles final, which at that point will be 2 hours away. Hannah's going to be in the chat. My mum might make a guest appearance again, just like she did last time, and it's going to be great, Wi-Fi permitting.
Thanks for that disclaimer. I might need it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. We'll save some material for that preview show, of course, but thoughts right now on the men's final?
Yeah, I'm actually, it's interesting because of the shock really of last night dashing the hopes of the Djokovic-Alcaraz match. I didn't fully consider what this final might be like, and there's a lot to like about it, both in terms of the narrative of 2 years ago Medvedev spoiling the party. He loved that role and he was absolutely amazing. Last night was his best performance since then, I think. And yet you've got Djokovic, who is stretching his lead now, looking to stretch his lead over the others, and to quote a little bit of Ons Jabeur, to get a bit of revenge here. You know, he'd quite like to take out Medvedev and put that to bed from 2 years ago. But I just think they're both playing really well. Obviously they are, because they're in the final, but they didn't squeak through. You know, those were two exceptionally good performances. Medvedev suddenly has found his very best stuff. I hope he brings it in the final. That's all I hope. If Djokovic is too good for him, well, that can certainly happen. But I would be sad if Medvedev put in one of those performances like he did at the Australian Open when they met that time, or, you know, just occasionally he doesn't turn up against Djokovic in quite the way you'd want him to, because I think that their matches can be fantastic.
Yeah, Medvedev's got this phrase that he's using, that he needs to play better than himself. He said that again going into the match against Alcaraz, and he said it that that's what he needs to do against Djokovic as well. The interesting thing about that, I think, is that against Alcaraz, that meant playing a bit differently, making adjustments because of things that had gone on before in that matchup. He needed to change things, because I know he'd beaten Alcaraz once before, but it wasn't the famous Carlos Alcaraz that he beat. And we saw that with the way he went after his serve and the way he hit his forehand. You know, I think that really caught Alcaraz out. So, you know, he needed to change to beat Alcaraz. He knows he can beat Djokovic, I think, playing his own game. He just needs to do it exceptionally well. That to me feels like the difference between his matchup against Alcaraz and his matchup against Djokovic. And I think he's going to do it exceptionally well. I think Medvedev is really going to play well tomorrow. And
I thought he was going to pick him for a second then.
I think I might pick him. I think if he plays like he did against Alcaraz... Well, I said that last night, didn't I? This isn't a bold statement. I think if he plays like he did against Alcaraz, he wins. And I feel pretty confident in him showing up.
I think it is a bold statement. The blokes won 23 Grand Slam titles.
He's lost a lot of finals here.
He has.
He's lost
three
seven.
Three and six, I think three he is, in
so
US
this
Open
is his
finals.
Tenth, isn't it? Yeah.
This is his 10th.
He's won three, lost six. I absolutely don't see happening what happened 2 years ago. I think Djokovic shows up. I think it could be a classic, actually. And I do... Look, it's a completely different match to Djokovic-Alcaraz. And I am still mourning the loss of that a bit. But I do love watching someone take on Djokovic at their own game. And really... his own game, sorry. And really believing that they can beat him at the game that has won him 23 Grand Slam titles. Mm. I do.
And I love watching Djokovic suddenly stop playing his own game and drop-shotting. Mm. Because that's what he's often done against him.
And I remember in the match immediately after the US Open final, they played in Bercy.
Yes.
And Djokovic serve and volleyed quite a lot against Medvedev, yeah. which was an interesting tactic. We are going to need to snack up, I think.
Yeah.
I think you are.
Long rallies.
I've got to commentate on it.
Long games.
I'm looking forward to
like,
it.
Like, I'm ready for 4 hours in that chair.
Yeah.
They had an amazing set.
I will bring my lumbar support cushion.
They had an amazing set last year, I think. Didn't they? And then suddenly Medvedev retired.
Medvedev retired, yeah.
Mm. And Djokovic looked in shock. It'd been such an amazing set, and then suddenly it was over, and he looked like he was kind of disappointed about that, because I think he was in the zone. But I just think... I agree with you, Catherine. I think we're in for a classic. I think we're in for another Nadal-Medvedev-type match from here.
Wow, okay.
From 4 years ago. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, sign me up.
That we sat here after that,
yeah.
Catherine.
And was it humid?
No, we were giddy. I remember that night. It was the first time I'd ever had a honey juice, so obviously I was completely.
I remember the honey juice, and yeah. Not much else. That was the night after I sprinted up to Bianca Andreescu's parents and asked for a photo with their dog.
That's correct.
It?
Yeah. 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 We've got the evidence.
Great content.
It's the only celebrity I've ever asked for a photo with Bianca Andreescu's dog. Before we leave you for a penultimate time, a few other results to whiz you through from today, starting with a maiden mixed doubles major title for Anna Danilina of Kazakhstan and Harry Heliavaara of Finland, 6-3, 6-4 over the home favourites, Jessica Pegula, who'll be... In fact, both Pegula and Krajicek, her partner Austin Krajicek, they will be their respective doubles number ones come Monday, but they lost out today 3-4 to Danilina and Heliavaara, who met and agreed to partner together literally at the mixed doubles sign-in desk on deadline. That was when they came up with the idea to partner up.
Wow. Imagine that. You just get out and call... I've clicked. You're the one for me.
They do say with doubles that you know pretty much instantly. I mean,
amazing.
And they kind of cruised through the tour. Like they had a match tiebreak in their first round, but then after that they didn't drop a set.
Absolute shock in the wheelchair women's doubles final. Dida de Groot not winning.
Wow.
I still get to say her name, though. The women's wheelchair doubles final was won... Well, not won. It was a walkover for Yui Kamiji and Keiji Montagnier, the second seeds over Dida de Groot and Jiska Griffin. That is a second Grand Slam title for Kamiji and Montagnier. They won the French Open as well, didn't it? And didn't they? And reached the Wimbledon final. So incredible, incredible year for them. We also had a win in the men's wheelchair doubles final for Stefan Uday, 52-year-old Stefan Uday, and Takashi Sanada, his Japanese partner. They got the better of Tom Egberink and Ruben Spargaren.
Good work.
Look, David, you're not in a position to say whether that was good work.
True.
We'll wait until we get added by the Dutch. They won 10-7 in the deciding set tiebreak. What else have we had today? We've had the junior finals, haven't we? And one American victory, one American defeat. We had victory for João Fonseca over Lerner Tien in the boys' final, 6-3 in the third, for the Brazilian Fonseca. And in the girls' final, we have a Catherine.
Oh, good.
A victorious Catherine. 18-year-old American Catherine Hui beat the, you'll be surprised to hear this, the young Czech.
Okay. Catherine, same
yeah,
church?
Yeah, the church pew? I think it's different.
Same church, different pew. It's yeah. A K.
Okay.
But we support her work. She beat Teresa Valentova, the 16-year-old Czech player, in the girls' final, 6-4, 6-4.
Yes, the Czech radio guy who sits next to us in the press room, who I think is the busiest man in tennis with all the Czechs. I was like, maybe I'll be in before him today. Nope. He had a young Czech to watch, and he was.
There's always a young Czech
always.
To watch. Absolute conveyor belt of champions. So we have the wheelchair singles finals to come tomorrow, the quad wheelchair finals as well. And we'll be previewing our final day of US Open action, 2 p.m. local time tomorrow. We hope you can join us on YouTube. The link to watch is in our show notes. It'll be in the newsletter as well. Do subscribe to the newsletter. Today's stat was a banger.
Yeah, I used it on the radio.
Also subscribe Thanks, to the newsletter David. Because things are going very well for me. I might never top the leaderboard again. I might not top the leaderboard at the end of this tournament, but right now in tomorrow's newsletter you will see my name at the top of that leaderboard.
You have been really carving it out.
So just subscribe for posterity.
You should also
become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. All sorts of boco coming at you next week, including that live Q&A for friends. We've also got a Grand Slam review show. Requests have gone out for voice notes, so that's all in the pipeline. Lots more still to come for Friends of the Tennis Podcast from New York. But for today, on a really historic day in Flushing Meadows, that is it, except to remind you about Willow, our lovely US Open mascot, our mascots, Xenia.
look at your face.
It's going good, Xenia.
I wonder if Xenia's smiling
we
as much
have
as you.
To enjoy it while it's happening, because
okay.
It won't last.
No, it won't. Maisie, we didn't do so good today. We got the right winner, but we got the wrong number of sets.
If only we'd put our heads together, David. Got the right number of sets and the wrong winner.
I think I got closer than you.
Yeah.
Tough scene for Darwin and Maisie.
I'm not going to argue that I was closer because I had the wrong winner.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. And that brings me on, actually, to possibly my favourite moment of the whole day, which was Coco Gauff, as she was being handed the $3 million cheque by the JP Morgan person? Someone from a bank.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Billie Jean was there about to hand her the US Open trophy. She leaned over into the mic and said, "Thank you, Billie Jean, for fighting for this." And I punched the air. It was an absolutely incredible moment. And good on Coco Gauff for proactively doing that and not having to be dollied up the question of what a Billie Jean King and the original nine mean to you and what they've done for tennis. And yeah, just she gets it in a way that so many others don't, and that is very, very special. So thank you to Billie Jean and Ilana Kloss. We have, of course, our top folks and executive producers on three. One, two, three. Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We start with Damon Levy.
Right, Damon.
Oh.
Any relation?
Dave Levy. Same, different spelling?
Different spelling.
Same church, different pew.
I don't know any Damon tennis players, I'm afraid. Only a racing driver.
Hill?
Damon Hill, yeah.
Damon says that his sister Nicole worked in comms for the ATP a little bit around the mid-noughties, so may have crossed paths.
Yes, I remember. I do remember.
What is Damon's
Nicole,
surname?
Yeah.
Levy.
Right. So Nicole Levy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, Damon. Hi, Nicole.
Splendid.
Thank you, Damon.
Yeah.
We've also got Nadika Desairam.
Oh.
Hi, Nadika.
Who is from Fargo, North Dakota. And she says, thanks to David for making me addicted to radio tennis commentary.
Whoa.
Oh, love that.
Thank you.
Hang on. How many Fargos are there in the United States of America? Because there's Fargo the film, right? And the TV series. But I'm thinking, which is set in Minnesota, like very famously set in Minnesota.
Is it?
Blank okay. faces
well,
all round.
It's a big country, let us probably know. Lots.
Let us know, Nadika, and thank you very much.
Yeah, and particularly thank you for getting into tennis commentary on the radio because of me. I can't believe it. Chuffed.
And finally, we have Lucy Perkins, who is being gifted a shout out, I think, as a Aww. Surprise by her husband.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, surprise.
Hey.
Surprise, Lucy.
Hi, Lucy.
Tennis Lucy's. Lucy Henman.
Lucy, yes.
Wife of Tim.
Lucy Suka.
Shuka.
Shuka, sorry. Who is the British wheelchair
yes.
player.
Yes. Very good. Perkins. Well, John, there's a Johnny Perkins. In fact, this is good, Lucy. Johnny Perkins is a Wimbledon employee. Communications?
He was formerly PR. The communications director, and now he is the voice of Wimbledon.
His role is under threat.
Yeah, Matt's, we hope you've enjoyed your day at Wimbledon. The OG of that, the official voice, is that of Johnny Perkins.
Yeah.
But watch your back, Johnny. Matt's coming for you. Thank you, Lucy.
Yeah,
we hope
thanks,
you've enjoyed
Lucy.
Your surprise. Thanks to all our friends of the Tennis Podcast. And if you're a friend, do join us for that Q&A show at 1 p.m. New York time, East Coast time on Monday. That one is just for friends. It's a Q&A show. We hope you can join us then. Our preview show, looking back on the tournament and looking ahead to the men's final, that live show on YouTube is available to everyone, and that one is at 2 p.m. tomorrow, Sunday, probably today as you're listening to this. So please do join us for that. Join Hannah in the chat, join us, and most importantly, join us tomorrow for one last daily podcast from the 2023 US Open.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.